This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
I'm Natalia Melman Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2. And of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, come. Jetzt bitte die richtige. Oh, nein, oh nein. Doch, ja, ja.
Was ist denn mit dir los?
Ich glaube, die fühlt sich lotto.
Vorfreude, Nervenkitzel, Glücksmomente. Das fühlst du mit Lotto Bayern. Lotto Bayern, nimm dein Glück in die Hand. In jeder Lottoannahmestelle und auf lottobayern.de.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Hilfe unter bzga.de.
Lotto Bayern wünscht viel Spaß mit folgendem Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the documentary with me, Luke Jones. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring together people to share their experiences. And this time, we're going to hear from Israelis and Gazans on the first days of the ceasefire. After 15 months of fighting between Israel and Hamas, which has brought so much loss and pain and destruction, there appeared at last something positive to cling on to. In Gaza, some of the displaced were able to return home to see what, if anything, was left of their neighbourhoods and the lives that they had previously had.
I need time to cry. I need time to silence. I need time to even relax. I don't know how long this time will be, but thank God all the time that I'm still alive.
That was Asma, a teacher in Gaza. She's been working in a makeshift classroom in a refugee camp, and we'll talk more with her later in the programme as we hear from both sides of the war in today's edition. We're going to begin in Israel, though, which is where this conflict began, of course, on the 7th of October 2023. On that day, around 1,200 people were killed and 251 were taken hostage into Gaza by fighters from Hamas, the armed group and political movement. Hamas is prescribed as a terrorist organisation by Israel, the United States and others. In response to this, Israel began its attacks on Gaza, vowing to destroy Hamas. Now, we're recording this edition on Friday, and as I speak, there is still progress to be made in the ceasefire deal. It's due to happen in three phases. Phase one takes place over 6 weeks, and if all goes to plan, we'll see 33 hostages returned to Israel from Gaza, with around 1,900 Palestinian prisoners freed by Israel in exchange. For our first conversation, we wanted to bring together three Israelis affected by the war. We'll hear from Rama. We'll also hear from Udi. His cousin was killed in the 7th of October attack. And first, Chani.
We had mixed feelings. We were very happy for the families of the girls who came back from captivity. On the other hand, we had a horrific feeling of seeing dozens of murderers being released from the prisons and going back to our streets. It's scary. We feel it's terribly unjust why the international community and the Red Cross and UN weren't harsher on the Hamas all these 14, 15 months, that our captives were not even visited hostages. We don't know what their condition is. We don't know if they're dead or alive. It's just so unjust and so unfair. It's very saddening and upsetting.
In the past 15 months, I've dedicated my life to making sure that the hostages are released. I couldn't be happier for seeing these, not just these women getting their lives back, but also their families getting their lives back. I know these people intimately. I feel like I know the hostages as if they were my sisters. This is a huge, I would say, alleviation or you know, a quick breath of fresh air in order to continue this struggle. After all we've been through, that just signing a piece of paper can bring people back alive without risking soldiers, without risking their own lives, that was a huge relief. At the same time, I absolutely acknowledge what Chani had said. I think that The state of Israel failed on October 7th. It failed to defend its citizens. It failed to protect them from being taken from their beds. It failed to send the military in time, and which cost many, many lives, and the lives of soldiers and civilians. And sadly, and I do say it with great sadness, that is the only way to bring back the hostages. If we Jews, Israelis, if we want to uphold our values of mutual responsibility, of being a cohesive people that would remain here and live together and not just let these people rot till the end of times by their captors in the basements, in the tunnels of Hamas, that is the only way to bring them out, unfortunately.
I agree with Udi. And also with Hani, I think that the price is very, 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 very high. But at the circumstances we are at, it's inevitable. You know, some of the families of the hostages said, we can breathe, finally. The war and the hostages really touch us deeply in our everyday lives. Unlike Udi, I don't know anybody from my close circle that is a hostage, but still I'm very, very much involved. I can also say that when I saw them coming back yesterday, I sat and I cried and I cried and I cried. It has to be done, no matter what the price is.
I would like to say that I hear with both Udi and Rome, I have to say, and I agree and I disagree. I disagree because we didn't try everything that we could have tried. When we are fighting our enemies, and they are horrific enemies, we saw what they did on October 7th, and it was a mini Holocaust for the Jews and for Israel. Do we have to play a game, a fair game with them? Are we playing a basketball game that one side uses their legs to kick the ball and the others don't? It's not a game. But we're fighting a war under rules that we cannot win the war. We're bringing in food and we're helping humanitarian aid into Gaza while that we're fighting a war with the Gaza people. We're not only fighting the Hamas. They keep on showing us we are Hamas. We, the people of Gaza, are Hamas, and Hamas is us. We saw that when they released the girls just a few days ago. We saw them on the streets and we saw the videos coming out of there, and we saw it on October 7th. So we're fighting a war, but we're not fighting a war, and we're tying the hands of our soldiers in the way they're fighting the war. We have three girls who came out and they are a whole world, but what about the 90-something captives that we still have in Gaza? They're still there. We don't know how many of them are going to be coming out. Are they going to be released? We have to understand we're fighting unfair people. They don't have our mindset. All they see is that they got what they wanted by doing those horrific acts on October 7th.
Every word that you say about the cruelty of Hamas, I agree. But I think what we are doing over and over again and again and again is that Israeli government thinks that by force will win this war. And looking at history, wars end with political solution. And I think that for the Hamas, what I understand is that the Hamas, as dictators, they don't care about how many people from Gaza are killed, how many of their soldiers are killed, how many houses are ruined. What is like of high priority to them is to be the rulers in Gaza. And this could not be solved, unfortunately, by force. This should be solved by substitute to Hamas dictatorship.
I think, Luke, what we're really hearing here is really where every kind of discussion in Israel, when you think about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, this is at the end where it goes, whether or not we can resolve it by force or should we go towards a political solution. But I think that there is kind of a midway here that Rama had just mentioned. And the fact that the Israeli government has set a goal that on the day after, Hamas will no longer be the governing body over Gaza, I think that is actually the only solution, viable solution at this point, that could actually dictate a different future for this region. Because what Hani is saying is right. We were fighting a war that could have been fought much better.
We are all deeply, deeply emotionally wounded, the Israeli and also the people in Gaza. And there is zero belief on both sides. This is very, very bad to start building neighbor relationships. But it depends a lot on who would be the ruler in Gaza, what his interests would be, and whom he would be supported by. If it would be again Israel that does everything not to let the Palestinian rule in Gaza. And so we would go back to square one, and this is what's happening now. We are at a very, very bad starting point. It depends on smart steps from our government that I don't see happening.
What's very important to note that we are still in the midst of the trauma. We're not afterwards. We're not in the processing. We're not in the rebuilding part. And neither Israelis nor Gazans. It's clear, you know, wars create radicals. And even before October 7th, the fact that there is no Gazan that hasn't been affected by this war doesn't create peace-loving and flower-throwing civilians. But this is the natural process of a long-standing ethnic conflict. And what needs to happen is that both peoples need to create a new narrative for the future.
Udi, Hani, and Rama in Israel. And just to add, at the beginning of that conversation, Hani mentioned the release of Palestinian prisoners and their crimes. Those who were freed last Sunday were convicted of relatively minor offences. Some of them were children, even. But some of the prisoners due for release later include those convicted of more serious offences, like murder. They're likely to be deported outside of Israel and the Palestinian territories to countries like Qatar or Turkey. You're listening to BBC OS Conversations on the first days of the Gaza ceasefire from the BBC World Service.
I was on the phone with her, working through contractions.
For CBC and the BBC World Service, The Con, Caitlin's baby.
Something was off.
There was somebody out there who's faking pregnancies.
There had been other victims scammed by the same person.
We don't want any other doulas to go through this.
The Con, Caitlin's baby, available now.
Du wärst so gerne Millionär? Statistisch gesehen könnte heute dein Glückstag sein. Im Lotto-Jackpot liegen heute rund 18 Millionen Euro. 18 Millionen. Lotto 6 aus 49. Nur wer mitspielt, kann gewinnen. Teilnahme überall bei Lotto, im Web und in der App. Chance 1 zu 140 Millionen. Mehr auf lottohessen.de.
15 months of fighting have had a devastating impact on Gaza. According to the Hamas-run health ministry, more than 47,000 people have been killed and some 100,000 have been injured. The United Nations says that 90% of the population has been displaced, tens of thousands of homes have been destroyed, as well as schools and hospitals. And Gaza's residents have also faced shortages of water, food and shelter. The ceasefire deal clears the way for 600 trucks a day carrying aid, fuel and supplies. Shortly after the ceasefire was announced, we spoke on our live OS programme to three people involved in the relief effort. Dr. Mohamed Abu Mughaseeb from Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, Liz Alcock from Medical Aid for Palestinians, and Sam Rose, who is the Senior Deputy Director of the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees. This is what they told us.
This tragic war has wreaked lifelong changes on every single person, every single household. The entire social fabric of Gaza has been ripped apart. The normal has become the abnormal. Just staying alive has become a struggle and has become an act of resistance in many people's eyes. And just the scale of what needs to be done to rebuild this place, to rebuild these lives, to rebuild these communities. People will never be the same again. Let's be clear. You don't go through something like this without that. People are relieved now, but they're also saddened and they're anxious because all this pent-up grief and suffering somehow needs to be released. And then, of course, there needs to be a meaningful trajectory for the future of Palestinians in Gaza to safeguard their lives, safeguard their futures, and really just enforce a real settlement so this never happens again. At the very least, this is what we owe the people.
We know that now fear will end, but pain is coming. People were having mixed feeling of crying, laughing, smiling. I mean, the future is not clear as well in Gaza. Everything has been turned apart. I mean, there is a lot again to do for Gaza.
One thing that really struck me was a colleague here who said to me, this is one chapter of suffering that's ended and the opening of another chapter of suffering. Which I thought was pretty poignant because, as he said, you know, I have no home to go back to. I have no family to reunite with. I will go back to my home and I will sit on the rubble of my home just to say that I've been there. But then what? Mm. And there's a real sense of then what?
Let's pick up on that point of then what with three people who have lived through the war in Gaza. My colleague Andrew Peach spoke to Asma, who is an award-winning English teacher displaced in a refugee camp in central Gaza. Surgeon Dr. Khalid Shawa, he was visiting family from Jerusalem when the war broke out. And 22-year-old Dalia, who has been studying to become a nurse.
In the day of the ceasefire, I lost my grandfather. Yes, he was suffering from malnutrition.
I'm sorry for this.
And waiting for the ceasefire to be done, it was so dangerous out there. And we couldn't call the ambulance or get a car to him to go to the hospital. So it was really hard. Like I don't know. Like, it shouldn't be that. It shouldn't be like this. It's a crime. I don't know. You shouldn't be like this.
And just tell me how your family are coming to terms with all that's happened, because now you've got the ceasefire, but also the worst has happened.
During the war, we hide all our pain and our grief, and we can't see what's been taken away from us. So now that the ceasefire happened, like, all our wounds been open, like, we are not happy. There is trauma, there is anxiety. We have been seeing death in the people becoming like a part of our daily life rather than a shocking event. People here get used to the sound of fighting and trauma and mental illness, PTSD and anxiety. It's all very common here right now.
Let me bring you in, Khaled. You work in the healthcare system. What do you make of what you're hearing about the lack of healthcare?
Yes, actually, the ceasefire has brought a much needed pause to the violence. We are grateful for the opportunity to start rebuilding our lives and our healthcare system. At least now you are not escaping from place to another to save your life or to avoid being killed by an airstrike or something like that. But the challenges and the destruction is revealing day by day. We are seeing a very huge amount of destructed infrastructure. All healthcare system infrastructure are destructed, actually. This is being obvious every day. I think we need a good plan to achieve our goal at rebuilding the healthcare system and to maybe we, I'm sure we need international community to help us in that.
Asma, tell me about your situation. Where are you with your family?
I have been displaced 8 times during 11 months, and I was displaced from my home for 15 months, the most difficult months in my life ever. But the most achievement that I feel that I had achieved, that I'm still alive with my little daughters. The moment that they have announced that there is a ceasefire agreement from Qatar in a Doha in Qatar, I cried a lot. And I think I will cry more and more whenever I will return to my north, my beloved north of Gaza. I managed to teach more than 2,000 children when moving from displacement camp to another and from shelter to another. I gathered children around me every time, and I decided every time in displacement, to start again. This was very horrible, and I feel very exhausted. I need time to cry. I need time to silence. I need time to even relax. I don't know how long this time will be, but thank God all the time that I'm still alive.
Actually, I just graduated a couple of days ago, and I was doing online courses with the Al-Azhar University and Birzeit. And that's really, it was a hope for me. Like when I was in Rafah, especially, I lose the hope. And I think that our life doesn't matter and we don't have any future. But then my dad told me that Birzeit University opened to do online courses. So when that happened, like, I feel like there's hope in the world and there's people know about us. That's make me think of the future. Education for us is the freedom. Really, it's the freedom for us.
Yes, I actually, when they announced the ceasefire agreement, there was a mix of feelings. I felt a little bit relieved, but actually you are sad about the people who passed away. One of them was my mother and my uncle, having no home after the destruction of our homes. You feel very sad about that, but you have the hope to start again and to rebuild, to give a hand in rebuilding the healthcare system and providing your services to the people. We have actually very, very large amount of challenges ahead of us. Advanced medical care is now much needed because we have a very large amount of complex injuries, complex wounds, and complex disorders that will need months and maybe years of continued long-term medical care.
And it's interesting, Dahlia, because, of course, you're, as you were saying, starting your career in medical care as well.
Yes, as a nurse.
Congratulations, Dahlia.
Well, thank you.
I mean, clearly, Dahlia, you've been bereaved in recent days. Is there anything about the current situation that gives you hope, that gives you optimism?
Yes, like when I was going to training at Al Nasser Hospital, I always walked to the hospital. So I saw these kids with their bag, with these store bags, and going to school, even though there is no proper food for them and no proper roof over their head. But like they think of the future, and that's really make me hope. Like these kids have hope. That's really give me the courage to keep going.
Yes, I think we have a few priorities. One of them is healthcare system. You know, these people have been without advanced medical care in the past months, in the past 1 year and 3 months. The healthcare system was busy dealing with trauma patients, with wounded patients, but as you know, you have malignancies, you have people with other disorders needed surgical intervention, maybe psychological treatment. We have, I think we have 2 million psychological patients now with PTSDs, anxiety disorders, and so on. This will be a very huge load on the healthcare system.
Yes, I know that there is visible wound, but much harder is with those who has invisible wound, like trauma or syndromes that people could never lift it high. Like there is children who are member of this war and can lift it behind. They lose their children too soon and life will never be the same. So now we had the responsibility to heal them. That's what we are going to do here in Gaza.
The pain is being relieved now. A few weeks ago, when there was constant bombing, you were only thinking about surviving, about providing a good shelter, to be safe, or to find something to eat, to help your children, to provide water, electricity, and so on. Now, after this all is being provided to the people, we are thinking about the much deeper wounds and the future of our children, our people, the future of our healthcare system, the future of our city, to the infrastructure, rebuilding the streets, hospitals, schools, and so on. That is a huge load, a huge goal, and a huge maybe task for all of us and for the international communities as well.
Khaled, Dahlia, and Asma, contemplating the future. And we wish them and all of our guests well, and we appreciate them sharing their experiences with us as well. I'm Luke Jones. Thanks for listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
I was on the phone with her, working through contractions.
For CBC and the BBC World Service, The Con, Caitlin's baby.
Something was off.
There was somebody out there who's faking pregnancies.
There had been other victims scammed by the same person.
We don't want any other doulas to go through this.
The Con, Caitlin's baby. Available now.